Can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. We'll start at 4 sharp.
Yeah.
What's the queue like right now? How many people? 45.
49.
It's showing here.
It'll keep growing.
Yeah, 61. That's just, yeah, 70.
Better.
Can we start now?
Yes, please.
Good afternoon and welcome to Lupin Limited Q4 FY24 earnings conference call. Please note that all participants' line will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the opening remarks. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to the management. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, friends. I'm very pleased to welcome you to our Q4 and end of fiscal year 24 earnings call. I have with me our MD, Nilesh, our CFO, Ramesh, and our Head of Investor Relations, Ravi. We look forward to sharing with you our highlights for the quarter as well as the full year and outlook for fiscal year 25. We're very pleased to close the year on a strong note, continuing to improve our operating margins and maintain the business momentum for the last many quarters. Revenues in the quarter have grown 30%, 13% rather, year over year, driven by all major regions, in particular US, India, EMEA, and APAC. Gross margins and operating margins improved in Q4 based on better business and product mix, in particular in the US, and also higher efficiencies. We were very pleased that EBITDA margins improved quarter over quarter despite higher R&D investment and Q4 seasonality impact in US and India. Our US business continues strong at $200 million plus revenues despite lower seasonal products and reduction in products like Darunavir that experienced additional competition. Our base business performed well, and new products like tiotropium and generic Prolensa helped offset the seasonal product decline. We are at a good level with 30% substitution with tiotropium 10 months into the launch. We expect tiotropium to continue to be a major growth driver in fiscal year 25. Element being the meaningful ones. We expect to sustain our US business at the $200 plus million level going ahead with the continued ramp up of tiotropium and new product launches in fiscal year 25. We have 10 plus launches during the year. Our India business has grown 8.3% year over year in the quarter and 9.6% for fiscal year 24. Within this, our India prescription business has grown 8.7% year over year and year over year on a full year basis. This was 1.2 times IPM growth. Core therapies like cardio and respiratory segments have grown well ahead of the market, 30% over IPM in fiscal year 25. We already started to see this in April. We have also carved out our trade generics business into a 100% wholly owned subsidiary to enhance agility and drive focus on this high growth segment. Apart from the US and India, other regions have performed well too. EMEA and APAC recorded strong double-digit growth in the quarter, driven by Foster generic in Europe and strong growth in markets like Australia as well as Philippines. We complement with the acquisition of two accretive established brands from Sanofi for Europe and Canada. During the year, we also closed our Medisol transaction, the French complex injectable company, which expands our position in complex generics, in particular in Europe. On the R&D front, we have continued to pivot to more complex products, in particular inhalation and complex injectables. We spent around 50% of our R&D investments in these two platforms. Portfolio, which we expect to increase to about 50 to 60% in the next few years. In fiscal year 24, more than 80% of our new product revenues in the US were from non-oral solid products. This augurs well for sustainable growth of our generic business going forward. Switching to compliance, we have continued to build on our momentum with recent inspections at Aurangabad and Dabasha with positive outcomes. We are on track with our remediation efforts at our Tarapur and Mandideep Unit 1 sites, and all our sites are compliant with best-in-class GMP standards. Reflecting on the year gone by, fiscal year 24 has truly been an inflection point for our organization. We are very pleased to turn around our business and deliver on our promise of sustained and profitable growth, driving the shift to complex generics, getting our India business growth to 20 to 30% above market, improving our GMP compliance position, and continuing to drive efficiencies. It has also been a year of growth across all our regions and business segments. As we look to evolving our business, building on our portfolio evolution into complex generics and specialty, we are truly excited about with the potential we have ahead of us. With this, I will hand it over to Ramesh for a deeper analysis of our performance.
Thank you, Vinita. Friends, I welcome you all to our Q4 FY24 and FY24 annual earnings call. I'm happy to report that this quarter, we've delivered another quarter of strong performance with EBITDA growth of 65% year-on-year and consistent 20-plus percentage EBITDA margins. As you would have seen, we've improved our EBITDA margins quarter-on-quarter by about 30 basis points, despite higher R&D costs during the quarter. In fact, for the full year, we've handled growth and profitability. Going into the numbers, sales for Q4 FY24 came in at 4,895 crores as compared to 4,330 crores in Q4 last year, a growth of 13% year-on-year. We've registered robust growth across most of our key geographies. North America has grown at a strong 23% year-on-year. India business has grown at a healthy 8.3% year-on-year, whilst EMEA grew at 17% year-on-year. Our ROW grew 8% year-on-year, and growth markets grew at 16% year-on-year. On a full-year basis, sales have come in at rupees 19,656 crores, a growth of 21% year-on-year and 20% year-on-year adjusting for NCE income received during Q1 of FY24. All key segments, excluding LATAM, have delivered strong growth. In particular, US grew 29% in constant currency terms. A formulations business, excluding India, during this period. The US business. During the quarter, the US business recorded a sales of $209 million, marginally lower than Q3 levels on constant currency basis. Whilst pricing on base businesses remained relatively flat, decline has been due to the lower volumes on seasonal products and lower sales of products like Darunavir. For the full year, the US business has recorded sales of $850 million as against $632 million last year, registering a growth of 29% year-on-year in constant currency terms. This has been led by volume growth in our base business and healthy contributions from new products. As Vinita mentioned, our strategy of focusing on complex products in our pipeline has paid handsome dividends, and more than 80% of the sales from our new products this year have come from non-oral solids. In fact, if we look at our pipeline for FY25, more than 70% of the new launches in the current year will be non-oral solid in nature. The India region. The India business has grown by 8.3% year-on-year during the quarter and 9.6% year-on-year in FY24. Specifically, during the year, the prescription business has grown 8.7% year-on-year and 9.3% ex-SIDMIS, outperforming the IPM growth during the year. Segments like respiratory, cardiology, and oncology have performed IPM growth in their respective segments. The share of in-licensed products in the quarter has reduced to around 11% of our portfolio from around 15 to 16% last year, whilst also having a positive impact on our profitability going ahead. We've launched 28 products in FY24 and plan to launch about 20 products in FY25. I'm also happy to report that our diagnostics business is scaling up very well with revenue growth of 160% year-on-year and around 40 labs under operation. EMEA. Our EMEA region, which constitutes our EU business and the South Africa business, registered strong growth of 17% year-on-year during the quarter and 24% year-on-year in FY24. This has been driven by steady growth in key EU markets like UK and Germany for Namuscla inhalation products and also partner business. Growth markets. Our growth markets includes the APAC and LATAM regions. The APAC market grew by 33% year-on-year during the quarter, led by strong growth in markets like Philippines and Australia. LATAM market, however, declined by 6% year-on-year in the quarter due to ongoing headwinds in Brazil, which are partially offset by growth in Mexico. Other operating income. Other operating income at rupees 66 crores has decreased by 34% year-on-year during the quarter. This decrease is primarily on account of the phasing of PLI benefits during the year. On a full year basis, other operating income came in at 355 crores against 372 crores last year. Gross margins. Coming to the profitability, Q4 FY24 gross margins were 67.8%, up from 59.6% in Q4 last year and 66% recorded in Q3 FY24. Whilst we have seen improvement driven by multiple factors, which includes better product mix, lower share of in-licensed products, increased volumes, the gross margins have also benefited from higher inventory, which you're carrying on account of as a risk mitigation measure due to geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. For the full year, reported gross margins have come in at 66.2% as compared to 58.3% last year. Adjusted for NCE income, gross margins are at 65.8%. Employee benefits expenses at rupees 99 crores increased marginally from 889 crores in Q3 FY24, translating into 18.4% of sales vis-à-vis 17.5% last quarter. This change is largely attributable to higher impact of ESOPs offset by lower seasonal domestic sales during the quarter. For the full year, employee costs have increased by 407 crores, led mainly driven by the annual salary hikes and the India field force expansion, which we undertook last year. This translates to 17.8% of sales on a reported basis and 18% on adjusted basis as compared to 19% of sales in FY23. Manufacturing and other expenses. Q4 FY24 manufacturing other expenses came in at 1,490 crores, which translates to approximately 30.4% of sales as compared to 30.7% of sales in Q3 this year. The expenses are lower in spite of higher R&D due to lower business settlement expenses, lower litigation costs, lower SG&A costs due to seasonality. Manufacturing other expenses in FY24 came in at 6,073 crores an increase of rupees 1,019 crores as compared to FY23. This translated to 30.9% on a reported basis and 31.2% of sales on an ex-NCE basis as compared to 31.1% last year. This has been led by primarily higher R&D outlay, higher SG&A on account of field force expansion and higher volumes from increased sales. R&D is at 426 crores, that's 8.7% of sales in Q4 FY24 as compared to 305 crores at 7% of sales in Q4 FY23. For the full year, R&D is 1,527 crores, vis-a-vis a guidance of about 1,500 to 1,550 crores, translating to 7.8% of sales. EBITDA, excluding Forex and other income, EBITDA was at 997 crores, up 65% year on year. Margins for the quarter were higher at 20.4%, vis-a-vis 20.1% in Q3 FY24 and 13.9% in Q4 last year. For the FY24 period, reported EBITDA margins are 19.3% and excluding NC income are at 18.5%. Depreciation amortization at 457 crores as compared to 264 crores last year. This recognized an impairment of 201 crores relating to the intangible assets, which are essentially discontinued ANDAs and certain tangible assets. ETR was 26% in Q4 and 20.1% for FY24. Operating working capital was at 5,691 crores as of 31st March 24, which translates to 105 days of net working capital. Whilst this has been a reduction as compared to the last year, it has increased by, from the 96 days recorded last quarter, primarily on account of higher inventory that we are carrying, given the disruption and the geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. Net debt stands at 477 crores, which reduced from 2,527 crores in March 23, indicating a reduction of more than 2,000 crores during the year. On the ESG front, of course, you've done extremely well, as you would be aware, and we have got a S&P DJSI score of 69 over on 100, kind of reflecting exceptional performance, placing us at the top 95 percentile for the pharmaceutical sector as a whole. With this, we open the floor for discussions.
Thank you very much, sir, for the insights. We will now begin the question and answer session. Please raise your hands from the participant tab on the screen to ask questions. We will wait for 30 seconds for the queue to assemble. Thank you. Okay, thank you for the patience. So the first question is from Neha Manpuria. Neha, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. My first question is on, the U.S. pipeline, two products specifically. First on, Mirabegron, we saw that we launched the product, and then we got an injunction. How do you think is our position in the litigation given the win in the lower court? Do you think this is still a credible launch for this year? And second on Spiriva, we have seen some moderation in market share in the last few weeks. So what's your sense there? Your opening comments did mention traction in the product. So, what are we expecting in terms of market share when you think about Spiriva going into next year?
So Mirabegron, we have a temporary restraining order. They were not given the preliminary injunction.
Yeah.
We feel pretty good about our position that, and we'll have a read on it over the next few days. Hopefully should be able to launch the product again. I think that Astellas has really filed multiple patent after patent and to prevent affordable generic to come to market, but we feel pretty strongly about our position both from a non infringement as well as invalidity standpoint. So she'll certainly have the opportunity to relaunch the product shortly. On tiotropium, we had guided at the beginning of the year that typically in the first year, the first 12 months, you see a generic product take 25 to 30% share. And we are, right now 10 months in at 30% share. You know, a couple of weeks can be up or down, but we're not seeing any tapering off of, on the on our order book or, share standpoint. So feel pretty good about the 30% so far. We're also going to take a look at what happens over the next couple of months. In June, the brand is announced as part of a response on respiratory products. The pressure that they had from Congress, they had announced a $35 cap on out-of-pocket pay, to patient. We'll see if there's any impact of that, if it suggests that we should modify any of our strategy. But so far, it's been pretty good. We've been pretty much on track on the share and very favorable on the pricing front as well.
So are we still okay with the 40% market share that we had guided to previously for Spiriva in the next year?
So we had said 30-35, and we'll okay. see, based okay. on, again, what is, we want profitable share at the end of the day. So we'll
yeah,
see.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Understood. And my second question is on the, gross margins, very strong gross margin performance. How should I think about the gross margins, going into next year? Is this the base that we should assume that we build on, or should I take a more blended, three quarter, for gross margins, given the higher inventory impact that you talked about?
So current quarter has, of course, been, influenced by the sales mix. And of course, tailwinds on account of the input costs. And there's, of course, the higher inventory buildup. I would imagine, given the buoyancy at the the top line, the kind of products that they are bringing in, and the emphasis on, in fact, Rauscher synthesis, potentially alternate vendor strategies and the like, we should be able to kind of sustain these levels of cost margins in the days to come.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Neha. The next question is from Kunal Dhamesha. Kunal, go ahead, please.
Yeah, good evening and thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on good set of numbers. Just the first one on the top line growth expectation for FY25 overall and the EBITDA margin expectation.
So we should be at close to 10% level in terms of revenue growth and EBITDA margin at 20% plus.
And would this EBITDA margin expectation include Mirabegron, or if Mirabegron happens, there would be potential upside to this?
Yeah, hopefully we have some upside to it.
Okay, perfect. And secondly, on the India business, now that we have again started growing at almost low double digit, how do we see this market growth in the next year and probably in the next 2 to 3 years? Given that we have one patent expiry which is coming, what would we do to offset that? And as a second part of that question is the number of medical representative we have in the business along with the first line manager and excluding the first line manager. Thank you.
Sure. So I think on the India business, our goal has been to grow at, 20 to 30% ahead of the market. The market, for example, in Q4 was sluggish, grew only 5.7%, but for the year, market grew at 7.6%. So we obviously grew ahead of the market at 8.7%. We would want this to step up even more. So I'm hoping, we're hoping for the market to grow at a slightly higher pace, and obviously we should be close to double digit growth in India accordingly. I don't have the exact specifics on the Salesforce numbers. It's roughly about 7,500 med reps and 10,000 people altogether.
Okay, perfect. And if I may, one more on the diagnostic business. We have seen strong growth, etc. But how do we see deployment of capital from here on? And you know, in terms of profitability, it is obviously a drag right now. But when do you see that you know, probably become break-even?
Yeah, so I think at the board level, we've built clear guardrails for all the adjacent businesses, whether it's the diagnostic business, whether it's the digital business, whether it's even our investments into areas like OTC. On diagnostics in particular, the burn went up in the last year versus the previous year. So it was higher in FY24 versus FY23. In FY25, we basically see it at a similar level, and then we see it coming down. So in the next 2 years, we see significant improvement on the business from a profitability perspective.
Okay, and in terms of any you know, revenue guidance, revenue growth guidance for that business, the entire other business apart from the pharma business.
Yeah, so I think we are calling it out separately in our numbers as we're reporting them now. So the numbers that are reported, I think 60 odd crores is basically all diagnostic at this point of time. That number will obviously grow to a multiple of that in the next 5 years. Still very, very small, and certainly not the focus area for India. The core pharmaceutical business will always remain the focus in India.
Sure. Thank you and all the best.
Thanks, Kunal. We'll take the next question from Bino Pariparambil. Bino, you're up.
Hi. Good morning and good afternoon. Vinita, first on Spiriva, can we assume that an authorized generic is now not going to come, or is it still a risk?
It's hard to tell, we hope that given the share as well as the current status of the market, that we continue as both the brand and generic, but it's hard to predict.
Okay. And in Myrbetriq, you launched only the 25 mg and not the 50 mg. What was the reason for that?
We were just prepared with the 25 mg, and just to have
Okay, so
25 mg was where we were ready to launch.
okay, so if the TRO is lifted, you can potentially launch 50 as well. You would potentially.
Yeah, potentially.
Okay. And to just one question on the market size on Myrbetriq. As per IQVIA and as per your PR, of course, quoting IQVIA, the market size is around 2 billion. But if you look at Astellas' annual report, it seems to be very different, only at around $700 million or something. Is there such a big rebate or something in there, or how do you read that?
Yeah, we believe that there is that gross to net that Astellas has contracted with PBMs.
Oh, okay. And if I may push one last one, the Oracea generic opportunity, the sales number you have quoted, again, quoting from IQVIA of around 128 million or so, is that the market for just Oracea or the entire doxycycline market, generic doxycycline market?
It's just Oracea. I mean, doxycycline is really large. Many different brands. And that's been a really nice launch for us in April.
Okay, understood. Great. Thank you. I'll join back.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bino. We'll take the next question from Nimish Mehta. Nimish, are you there? Hello, Nimish. Okay, so we'll go with Shyam
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Nimish, we can hear you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm it was unmuted.
Please, please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. See, what I understand for the US generic industry that in the month of April, we have seen some significant price reduction across the board. One wanted to know your views and also the impact on our portfolio.
So the price erosion actually has been pretty reasonable over the last 12 months, I would say. We experienced a single-digit price erosion, and there still continues to be a very strong drug shortage issue in the US. We were just in Washington, D.C. last week, along with a number of our peers, and heard a lot of concerns about drug shortages. So we expect that that should really keep price erosion at a reasonable level. going forward, you know, at least in the next 12 months. So we don't really see this April impact. You know, you probably are looking at IMS data, which you know, really does not give you a real picture of net pricing.
So the reduction that is seen in April is not something that is real in nature or not seen on the ground. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we haven't, like I said, you know, last 12 months has been a single digit.
Okay. The other question I have is regarding the domestic market. We have seen government cracking down on a lot of the smaller CMO suppliers. So, you know, wanted to know how is it impacting Lupin? And will that also mean that we will have more capacity to build so that, you know, we kind of do not get into any problem related to CMO's quality issues or anything like that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that clearly the government is showing intent to move up on quality, which is why they've been cracking down on some of the suppliers. You would have seen today they talked about new standards for exports as well.
Right.
So I think there is a clear intent to move up on quality, which is great for companies such as us. We've not had any disruption with any of these. Most of these suppliers we've not worked with, or you know, we've had mitigation plans in place as these issues may have arisen as well. We have a pretty robust process of vendor management in place. So not impacted. I think there's a bigger opportunity in the longer term to manufacture more ourselves. And that's something that we will explore.
And if I may, the last one on trade generics, that would be very helpful. I mean, we have seen, you know, all the large companies, including ours, to be launching a separate trade generic business, either in the form of a company or a division. So what is that trigger, and how do you think this will play out again, you know, versus our own brand? So do you think that at an aggregate level, this will grow significantly enough to kind of challenge the pricing for the whole of industry?
So I think the trade generics is a growth opportunity. Clearly, it's a higher growth segment. That being said, it's going to remain a portion of the market. It's not going to be the dominant portion of the market. And our focus, you know, just like others, would be to, you know, bring that focus, bring that agility, bring that clear accountability into managing that business very closely. This business has to be managed very closely. It has to be managed much more aggressively than even the India domestic business. So, and I think that was the main reason to spin it into a separate entity. But you know, again, like just like with anything else, there are guardrails that are built into this, and you know, we don't think this is going to be the dominant element of the Indian market.
But I just wanted to know, what is the trigger for which it will grow? Because this has been there since many years now, right? So what is the change that has happened in the market which you see is going to trigger this growth in the generic business?
I think whether it's organized retail, whether it is the hospital segment, whether it's more institutional buy, obviously there is more of this business happening there, and therefore that is the opportunity as well, including to, you know, tier two, tier three kind of towns as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nimish. We'll take the next question from Shyam Srinivasan.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, and thank you for taking my question. Just the first one on the U.S. business, right? So we have done an annual revenue of $815 million. And just want to see how we should look at it in a medium to longer term. Can we go back to $1 billion at some point of time? What are some of the drivers of that particular thing? I think that's the first question I have.
Yeah, so certainly with the pipeline that we have over the next 2 years, you know, next year being both a combination of some of these P4 products where we should have some upside opportunity and, you know, some nice injectable products as well. The following year, you know, potentially the launch of tolvaptan, which we're an exclusive generic, you know, that plus our injectable portfolio, products like liraglutide, Victoza, Saxenda, glucagon, you know, we expect fiscal year 26 to be a, you know, certainly a year where we have, you know, if not at $1 billion, we should be close to it.
Understood. Vinita, so still close to what, about 10-12% kind of growth, right? won't we see a more faster growth? I'm just wondering why not? Sorry.
Well, we still assume that the older products will come down. You know, we still assume in our plan that we will see additional competition on existing products, that new products, you know, offset and help grow. So, you know, hopefully, potentially there's an upside if you don't see that kind of price erosion.
Got it. Helpful. Just the second one is on the 80% of new products are non-oral in nature. If you were to look at the map, the margins on that portfolio vis-a-vis say the orals, you know, should one actually expect higher margins, or you think even non-oral margins have actually come down to whatever the 20% odd that we are showing? How should we look at that?
No, definitely much better margins. That's what's, you know, helped us really shore up the US business profitability and the company profitability as well to a certain extent. It's, you know, the complex products are, you know, relatively speaking, better margin products.
So, yeah, just trying to tie this to the guidance then. For last question for Ramesh. When we talk about gross margins not improving further from here, but all this contribution of non-oral continues to remain in the forward path. So just trying to tie, are we at gross margins, we should see benefit, but we might give it back elsewhere, is it? Is that how we should look at it?
There is going to be a higher quantum of R&D spends. You know, it's kind of reflected in the current quarter itself. You know, so about 150 crores. So that run rate would certainly be, you know, would be there. You know, so, whilst, of course, there would be improvements on the gross margins front, there are also tailwinds. So you looked at, for example, the freight element, you know, there's uncertainty there and so on. So we can't actually provide for all kind of ups and downs in the future. So to the extent we would prefer to be prudent in our guidance also.
Understood. Yeah. Thank you and all the best.
Thanks, Shyam. So before we move to the next question, this is a reminder to request all the participants to raise their hands from the participant tab for more questions. So we'll take the next question from Surya Patra.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity. Ma'am, first question is about the Spiriva. So how should we think about the pricing of Spiriva, or how sustainable is this pricing given the kind of cap on the overall cost that has been that you mentioned?
So far it's been very stable. You know, we priced based on the brand price and the minimal amount of discount that we had to give to be able to get substitution. And we will see what the brand does. You know, we'll see the impact of the change in coupon that is expected to come in June and determine if we need to do anything more than that. But at this point in time, it feels, it looks like it's very stable.
And in terms of the list price correction for the brand, have you seen any change in the initial period of this quarter?
No, we haven't.
So is it fair to believe that the list price is likely to be maintained for the entire of the year?
I would expect so. I wouldn't. We don't have any indications that you know. Of course, the brand can do what the brand wants to do, but they typically don't change the list price.
Okay. Second question is about overall respiratory sales contribution to the business. So is it possible to say, like, what is the respiratory sales mix for the US business, and what is in general for your overall Lupin-wide business?
So company-wide, it's at 25%, you know, given the strong presence in the US, India, and Europe, and also growing presence in other countries. We just launched Teotropium in Canada. We're launching in Australia. So 25% company-wide, the US is close to 40%.
Okay. And this quarter, it looks like that we have seen some sequential uptake in the albuterol market share. So could you share what is the market share currently that we are enjoying? And what is your outlook there in terms of pricing as well as in terms of the competition that you might face further?
So it's pretty stable at that 23% level, market share. There's been some uptake because of seasonality in the past couple of months, but it's tapered off a little bit because the flu season was short. But it's been fairly stable. And, you know, also from a competition standpoint, we've actually, you know, it's a very difficult product to make. It's not easy to make the MDIs and DPIs as we find as well. So we hope to see more, more stability in this portfolio.
Okay. See, while you have mentioned that going ahead by FY28, you are likely to introduce many complex products, around 20-odd products over 3-4 years. So given those kind of pipeline, where do you see your respiratory portfolio playing for your overall growth strategy?
It's a significant growth driver for us for the next 5 years. Now, as we look at a five-year plan, I mean, both the respiratory and injectable products, where we have an increasing percentage of our investment, they're going to be a larger part of our portfolio going forward.
Okay. Last one question. If you can comment on the Lupin Life initiatives along with the diagnostic and that helping to your domestic portfolios, domestic business as a whole. So how all these are integrated and how are these going to help you in the domestic positioning?
Sure. And that's a question that we ask the team regularly as well. I think when it comes to diagnostics, there's background noise. I think on diagnostics, one part obviously is the role that key opinion leaders have play on diagnostics. We're looking at companion medicines between diagnostics and drugs as well. So we're looking at pathways there. There are certain synergies, but I think other than that, obviously the bigger thing is to be a trusted provider of healthcare, which is why we have that business. On digital, I think that is much closer to our cardiovascular metabolic play. I think it's the same doctors. We're reaching the same target audience for an additional set of prescriptions. And hopefully we will get substantial rub-off benefit of that. That business is obviously, I think we're talking about changing doctor patient behavior. And there, that's obviously more challenging from that perspective. But we've had some nice wins to start.
Okay. Just last one question, if you allow. Could you give us some update about the Foster Inhaler market share progression in Europe, as well as what is the progress that we have seen for our Enbrel in Europe? What is market share that we would be having?
So Foster,
we
still the dominant share in most of the European countries. We've launched, I think at this point, we're in 13 countries. And through both our direct presence as well as our partners, and have continued to really build on our share. So it's been a material growth driver for our European business and this past year. Continues to be a very strong product for us, largest product for us in Europe.
It's a $15-20 million product, ma'am?
It's more than that.
Oh, okay. And
Yeah, Enbrel also has improved. We have had growth in Enbrel revenues this past year. In Europe, certainly the shares grow, but we have launched also in other countries like Russia, the product was launched. We also have countries like in Latin America that are on the table right now. We are launching in the Middle East and Australia. And we just announced also this last week, we launched in Canada through our Sandoz partnership. So the product continues to grow in all of the available markets.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, ma'am. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks, Surya. Can we sincere request to everyone to limit your questions to maximum two so that we can accommodate more participants? You can always get back in the queue for more questions. Thank you. So we'll take the next question from Tarang Agrawal. Tarang, are you there? Hello.
Yes. Hi. Hi. Good evening and congratulations for an extremely strong set of numbers. A couple of questions. We read a lot around shortages in the US, both around injectables as well as the oral solids. There seems to be a fair bit of traction from regulators and state actors as well. You being there, are you witnessing anything structurally changing in this market? One. Second, versus how things were, say, a year back, how have things evolved and how do you see these things moving forward? So those are two sub-questions. And second, if you could give us some sense on what's happening with your biosimilars business. Thank you.
Yeah, so we certainly have seen things stabilizing. When we looked at a number of the drug shortages and analyzed the root cause, the largest percentage was they were economically not viable. So companies like us, a number of our peers had gotten out of these products because they were just from a pricing standpoint had come down to a level where it didn't make sense to continue to manufacture them. So there's been a good amount of recognition of it, both with our customers as well as the other stakeholders, the U.S. government, the FDA, the FTC. There's been a good level of concern across the board in the U.S. on these drug shortages and the cause for drug shortages. And we think that that's the reason the price erosion has stabilized to some level. We are going to hopefully continue to see this going forward. Structurally, I'd say that there are a lot of stakeholders, in Washington, D.C., that are looking hard at the reason for these drug shortages and are working hard to see what they can do to prevent these. So there is a good amount of scrutiny on the market dynamics that are causing companies to, exit products. And hopefully, that will bring some level of balance in the marketplace or continue to maintain the balance in the marketplace, which will be promising for the U.S. generic market. On biosimilars, our focus so far has been really more focused on development and manufacturing of the products that we have chosen to get into. We have Enbrel, of course, Etanercept that we partnered with Mylan, which is now with Biocon. We have other partners like Sandoz in Canada. And we have the right to the U.S. ourselves, which comes available in 2029. So that is kind of a partnered product so far. We have pegfilgrastim that we are still waiting to get FDA approval. In fact, we just resubmitted our supplement, the CRL response. We are actually in the process of resubmitting it shortly, but believe that we are in a very good position there as well to get FDA approval. So far, we've got European, Japanese, every other regulatory authority, but not the U.S. FDA approval. That's going to be an important one for us in fiscal year 25. And then we have other products that we have pretty far along, like Lucentis, ranibizumab. We intend to file in fiscal year 25 to the FDA and as well as other parts of the world. So that should be a good opportunity for us on the ophthalmic front. And then we have a couple of respiratory products that we are pursuing as well, mepolizumab and benralizumab, and tracking the market very closely to see if we can try to get the products through some of the countries without a PD study. So we continue to build on our biosimilars platform and strategy, but cautiously, I would say, because there are a tremendous amount of hurdles as well on the biosimilars front that we have seen both from a regulatory perspective in terms of what it takes to get it through FDA and other agencies, as well as market access from a go-to-market standpoint, and then at the end of the day, the contracting strategy of the brand. So cautiously building that portfolio, which will serve us long-term as a really nice additional platform that will help us differentiate our portfolio.
Okay, thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarang. We'll have the next question from Girish Bakhru.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Vinita, you commented on Spiriva AG, not sure, but any update on the next ANDA filer when we can see update on the Chinese product Lannett was trying to bring?
Yeah, hard to predict, really. You know, we know how long it took us. It was 5 years. And you know, it's a complex product to make. So we'll wait to see. We think there's a hurdle patent in 27, which it's hard to get around. You know, we expect the next couple of years should be, you know, fairly sustainable.
Understood. And just commenting again on this few pipeline products you mentioned, especially Victoza, Saxenda, none of the Indian generics have settled, whereas we have seen so many MNC companies have already settled with Teva, possibly forming the market later this year. Just trying to assess how competitive this will be in FY26 and whether it will be meaningfully different depending upon what device every generic brings.
So we think that it could potentially be very competitive based on the number of companies that have filed. But just looking at how long it has taken companies to get approval, there might be you know, a very different kind of approval scenario in the marketplace that should help you know, make it a pretty attractive opportunity. So, you know, hard to predict really who's going to get approved when. But in the next couple of years, certainly, you know, we should see a few competitors in the marketplace.
And last one, I mean, Dulera, Organon is still expecting a generic this year. Any thoughts on your CRL update?
Yes. So we are still working on our response to the FDA. Our team has met with the FDA recently, had a you know, pretty good clarity on what it would take to respond to the agency. We expect to respond this fiscal year. So we
All
don't
right, thank
expect
you.
to launch in the next 12 months.
Understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Girish. Can we have the next question from Harsh Bhatia?
Yeah, thank you. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, thank you. Just two quick questions. One is from the Nagpur Unit 2. I think so. Glucogen is launched from that plant. From the next 12 months perspective, which of the products do you think can come from that particular plant?
Sorry, I didn't catch the name of the product you mentioned.
Glucogen.
Do you mean an injectable plant? Because I still can't make out the
Yeah,
product.
Glucagon. Nilesh, it is Glucagon.
We haven't launched Glucagon. We have launched Ganirelix.
So I think there's five or six launches that we would expect from the Nagpur plant, five, six filings as well. It's still in ramp-up mode, really. There's only one or two products, one for US, one for elsewhere, that we sell from that plant right now. But this is a world-class plant. So I think from that perspective, you know, five, six filings and five, six launches is what you would expect on a steady state going forward.
This would be for a period of next 2 to 3 year period, right? The five,
Yeah,
six launches.
if at all, we should accelerate.
Okay. And when was the last inspection for the plant? The unit
12
two?
months ago.
We were inspected
A few months ago, actually.
12
Yeah.
months ago.
Yeah, that was the oral solid.
Injectable.
About 12 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Unit two as well, the injectable block.
Injectable plant is what we're talking about.
Okay. And could you comment anything on Ellipta? I think so. Last time we had spoken about a few quarters back that we'd be looking at filing the product.
Yeah, we're still working on it, making good progress on the platform as well as the two key products. And, you know, hope that end of this fiscal year 25, we're able to report material progress.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Harsh. The next question is from Damayanti Kerai.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Just wanted to understand your big margin improvement trajectory better. So Ramesh mentioned it's a combination of multiple factors, but if you can help us understand, say, how much is broadly contributed by process efficiencies, which you have brought over last few years, and what could be broader contribution coming from new launches, et cetera, and leaving apart the inventory gain, which you had seen during fourth quarter. So very broadly, you can also help us understand which are the visible pockets of improvement which is there for you? Because last quarter, I guess you talked about your aspiration margins of around 22.5 to 23 for next few years. So any commentary on that will be helpful.
Actually, you're asking for too many questions in the same breath, but let me explain what I would. Firstly, on the buoyancy actually contribute. So, for example, the Spiriva launch itself brought in about 4 to 5 percentage points, so to speak, on the gross margins and the like. But of course, we've been working on a host of other initiatives, which actually helped out on the gross margins, essentially in terms of the route synthesis, AVD programs, vendors, and the like. That contributed about, and over the last 3-4 years, I would say about 400 odd crores. Though, of course, a part of this was eroded by potentially price erosion and the like. The second part, of course, is we kind of identified a host of things that we thought were inefficiencies in the system, which included, for example, failures to supply. We had issues in terms of air freighting. We had issues in terms of inventory write-offs and a host of other things. So we worked on that as well. And that, apart from, of course, what we worked on, below the gross margin line, which included the, workforce rationalization schemes across factories, R&D, and the like. So all of this put together, idle time, footprint reduction in some ways, all of this contributed, I would say, another about 400 to 500 crores. This has brought us to the levels that we already are in, which is around the 20.5 percentage points. We have also identified newer strategies for some of these adjacencies, and businesses that you would like to spin off on, spin, and so they kind of rotate on their own axis, which is, including product, verticals like potentially the API CDMO, and at some point in time, the biosimilars and the like. If once all of this is actually done, surely we would be, to be something to be around the 23, 24 percentage points in line with our peers, so to speak.
Okay, so from this exit margin rate of 20% plus, there is good headroom to go up to, say, 23% if all these things work out for you.
Which we think will happen in the next 2 to 3 years for sure.
Okay, so 25, you guided for 20% plus margin, and then this 20% plus margin can move up to, say, 23% in another 2 years or so. Is that the trajectory we are broadly looking at?
That's a very good understanding of the situation.
Okay. And my next question is on a few of the peptide products, I guess, which we earlier discussed. So anything, I guess, which should be meaningful from Lupin's perspective in next 2 years? So you mentioned liraglutide, I guess, is the nearest opportunity in this space.
That's right.
Yeah.
Our first peptide launch was Ganirelix, and liraglutide will be a material opportunity over the next few years.
So from your filing perspective, it's what is the remaining steps? Like, you are done with the process. It's a review by the FDA and final approval, which is to come, or there are some pending steps which you need to complete before these products come in market?
No, so we have filed a while ago and expect that we should get approved, hopefully soon. And, based on the patent settlements and outcome, we'll plan to launch.
Sure. And my last question is,
Damayanti, I'm sorry. We'll have to request you to get back on the line, please, because there are many callers.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Thank you. We'll take Alankar Garudi next, please. Alankar, are
you there? Hi. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. First question, regarding the 200 crore impairment charge, how many ANDAs have you discontinued in this quarter, and what were the reasons for the same?
So some of these were, actually all of the ANDAs essentially bought out items, and a lot of this resided in America. Three of those actually reside, but domiciled in India, something which actually came out of our Anglo-French acquisition that we did in India a couple of years ago. So we essentially, because of NBE ruling with the Indian authorities, we discontinued a couple of products. So those are the things that we wrote off, and of course the products that you're not selling in America. Apart from that, we also took a, you know, our accelerated write-off when it came to a few assets which we are not putting to use.
Understood, sir. And second question, would it be fair to assume that the impact of competition in SuperApp will be seen more in first quarter and there was not much of an impact in the fourth quarter?
Yes, it's been a very good, very stable product so far.
Understood, ma'am. Thank you. And that's it from my side.
Thank you. So maybe we'll take 5 more minutes.
Yes, ma'am. So we'll have the next question from Nitin Agarwal.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Vinita, just on Mira background, what, assuming the TRO gets lifted, what sort of exclusivity period are we looking at the current state of affairs for the product before fresh competition comes in?
So it's hard to predict, but we think that you know, it should be two or three players in the near term, in the next 12 months.
Okay, but we do stand to get in the current two-player market situation last another 5 to 6 months?
We think so.
Okay. And secondly, beyond this, for the rest of the year, which are the other meaningful launches that we can look forward to here?
So doxycycline, Oracea has been a good launch for us. Mirabegron, of course, a large one. Slind, another P4 that, you know, August is going to be... we'll get a read on our litigation as well as product approval. And then we have multiple ophthalmic products, including some interesting ones like prednisolone is a nice one. We have a couple of products where we have settlement dates within the year, but unfortunately cannot share. I mean, we have two or three products like that. And we have a nasal spray product and some injectables. And we have a couple of injectable products as well.
Thanks. That's helpful. And lastly, you know, any color on, you know, we've got a meaningful size of emerging markets now. I mean, if how these markets, some of these key markets have progressed over the last couple of years, and where are they on the profitability front, some of these bigger markets for us?
Yeah, so, you know, when I look at the other emerging markets, look at Latin America, Mexico, Brazil, as well as Philippines and South Africa, and we have done extremely well in Philippines. It has really been very stable, high growth business for us and highly profitable, compared to the company level of EBITDA. South Africa business has been a really good scale, but had got under a lot of pressure with the currency issues there and the fact that majority of the portfolio is imported into the country. That has turned around in the last couple of quarters. And, the business has started growing very nicely as well. So South Africa is in a pretty good position, both from a growth as well as an EBITDA standpoint. In Latin America, you know, both Mexico and Brazil. Mexico, actually, we had a significant challenge last year with a facility being closed down for 10 months, which actually caused a lot of disruption in product supply. And that has... We were back into the market with the ramp-up of our portfolio, have seen a really good resurgence there of our business. So we expect fiscal year 25 to be really strong for us in Mexico. Brazil continues to be a bit of a challenge for us when we are looking to, find ways and means of, improving that business. But that continues to be a low margin business for us.
Yeah, the only thing that I would add to this is essentially, whilst we recognize the potential and the possibilities, there's also the risk of Forex. It generally sometimes eats into the gains that we make.
So I know that we are out of time, but we'll maybe take, we see there are a number of folks with questions, so we'll take five minutes more.
Thanks, ma'am. So we'll take the next question from Shravan Mukherjee.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one. Can you share, Vinita, the number of ANDAs filed in this fiscal year?
The US ANDAs was a small list. It was 6 products that were filed in the year.
And is there any reason the intensity of filing has come down this year?
So we have started focusing quite a bit on the complex products where, you know, you're going to see fewer filings, but more impactful filings.
Yeah. I think this year was also a repurposed year. So, you know, we do see a ramp up in the filings that will happen in FY25, where just FY24 went to kind of an all-time low.
There's some that slipped into also the first quarter, you know, this quarter right now.
Okay, so should we expect around 15 odd filings going forward? Is that, or it would be higher?
11 to 15, I would say. Because again, our focus is on more complex filings than the number of filings.
Understood. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Sharon. We have the Amay Chalke, please. Amay, you can go next. Amay, are you there?
Go next.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, yes, you are. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. The first question was on the spending, considering that our visibility on the product launches is quite good for the US. We will be having good cushion on the margin front. So are we going to up the spending on the marketing and R&D, or you will keep the cap on the R&D and marketing spend going ahead? How would be the thinking on the spending front?
We would obviously keep an eye on all the lines, but we do recognize the potential to to increase R&D a bit, and that's what we've done for the next year at least. But for sure, there would be a tight leash on all kind of costs.
Sure. Second question, if we can give clarity on the Respirimat and Ambison, we were supposed to file in FY25. How is that going? Yeah.
Respirimat is progressing pretty well, and we should make significant progress this year, hopefully file at the end of this fiscal year. It is very much dependent on supply of the devices that we manufacture outside. We don't do it in-house, but it's progressing extremely well. Ambisome, actually, we got out of the transaction and we took a charge earlier this fiscal year 24. We were not seeing the product progress from a development perspective. With our partner, we decided to focus on Doxil that we expect to launch in fiscal year 25, but also saw additional competition in Ambisome, so decided to repurpose that investment into other products.
Sure. And just the last question on the biosimilars, like product like Pegfilgrastim, where what would be the thinking of a follow-on players who are coming now after market has been genericized so much? Is it for you, it would be a learning curve from this product, or you would really want to see a substantial gain in the market share in these kind of products?
No, I think with a late entrant, we will certainly use it as a learning opportunity for us. I mean, we certainly should have a good cost position, but would want to gain profitable shares. So I wouldn't say that is a material share opportunity unless folks get out of the market. So it's really going to be more of a learning opportunity for us.
Sure. Thank you for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amay. Thanks, Amay. We'll take one last question from Tushar Manudhani.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes.
Just taking this biosimilars also, the overall, how much investment you would have done biosimilars till date, and how much of the R&D spend, say, for FY25 would be towards biosimilars?
About, in terms of infrastructure, et cetera, that they have catered between 450 to 500 crores is the figure. In terms of R&D expenditure, we also have this policy of partnering with, in fact, the passive financing. Financing companies.
So it'll be less than 10% for R&D spend for
FY25. Understood. And just one.
I think also one thing that we did not mention is in a biosimilar strategy that we also leveraging the capability for pipeline for India, which is a tremendous opportunity for us. To build especially in oncology and immunology products.
Understood. And just one last clarity on the US sales. While there's a good pipeline to be, in terms of approved as well as launches for FY25, Still, you have indicated that US quarterly sales to sustain at $200 million. Is that what you commented, or I heard it wrong?
Yes, that's what we said, because we do expect some products to see pressure, like Suprep will see some pressure while we continue to build on tiotropium and other new product launches. So a combination of all of that, we said that will get us to the $200+ million, and hopefully with some litigation wins like mirabegron, we should be more than that. And then certainly going into fiscal year 26, where we have more large exclusive products like tolvaptan, as well as our peptide injectables, we should be able to build it to closer to $250 million per quarter level.
Understood, ma'am. That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. So that was the last question. Hopefully we were able to respond to all your questions. I just say that it's been a very strong year for us as an organization. The team is all charged up with what we have delivered. We feel like we are in a very good position. All of our major markets, India and the US in particular, but also the other emerging markets, based on the market position as well as the portfolio position, to really drive our business going forward to where we want to go. We certainly have, like Ramesh mentioned, that 2023, 20, mid-20s EBITDA margin very much on our radar for the next few years, and going to continue to work to be able to get there while evolving our business. So thank you again for all your support and questions, and we'll look forward to connecting with you next quarter.
Thank you very much, ma'am. On behalf of Lupin Limited, that concludes the session. Thank you for joining us, and you may now exit the webinar. Thank you.